Welcome back to Some Time to Explain, the Destiny Lore podcast where friends come together to talk about Destiny lore. This is episode 20. That's fucking weird.
I think it's cool.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm Mike. My pronouns are he, him. And with me as usual is my co-host Kit.
Hey, I'm Kit. My pronouns are he, him, and or they, them.
What's up, Kit?
Hey, hey. I'm weathering a storm.
Yeah, you are.
I am.
Hope everything goes well. Big, is it a hurricane that's coming along the coast there?
I think it's a tropical storm now.
Okay.
Henri. It's T.S. Henri.
Henri. Oh, ha-ha.
Ha-ha. The French-ass storm. Anyway, yeah, so I'm waiting to see how the storm shakes out here in Massachusetts, and... yeah, that's where I'm at. What are you up to today? How are you doing?
Hope everything goes well for you.
Me too.
Yes, fingers crossed. Knocking on wood. Mm-hmm. All the things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good. As usual, I've been doing some work bullshit, but that's good. That's also knocking on wood. That seems to be good now, so here we are.
Yeah. here we are. We've arrived.
Yeah. What have you been up to this past week?
Well, I've been watching kind of more movies than I usually do, I would say. you and I together continued our journey through the Ava rebuilds.
Yeah.
With 3.33 and 3.0 plus 1.0, which, come on.
Very normal naming scheme.
Very normal. And all the parentheses and the titles. And so so we watched the new movie, and I don't know. We should be careful about spoilers because it's only been out for a week or two. So I certainly don't want to spoil it for anyone who's casually, you know, come to the Destiny podcast. And heard us talk about anime. Surprise, bait and switch.
I suspect that there will probably be a dedicated episode somewhere in some feed of us talking about it. So I think that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But the other big movie I watched this week was Point Break, which I'd never seen, and which is great.
Funny that you had seen Hot Fuzz before you saw Point Break. you have to go back and watch. Well, you don't have to go back and watch that, but...
But it might... Yeah, I might get more out of it now.
What did you think?
It's a great movie. It's awesome. There are so many hot, wet people the whole time, which is great. I never understood why Patrick Swayze was like a heartthrob, you know, because by the time I was like, I hadn't seen any of his like big heartthrob movies, really. He was like older, you know? And so I was like, oh, I get it. I see now. A surprisingly queer movie, honestly, to me. There's this whole like death drive thing going on there that I thought was fascinating.
Hmm.
And interesting, like, I mean, Swayze and Keanu's characters are just, like, so in love. And I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Their chemistry is so compelling. especially compared to the kind of, like, the main, like, hetero romance is, like, just okay. But the action heroes, the hero and the villain of this story, ooh, such chemistry. And, yeah, I thought there was, like, I read a lot of queerness in this movie, both with that and also just like with some of the surfers having like, you know, non-gender standard names and things like that. I thought that was just kind of, I like that, which I suspect is probably different from reasons why you like that movie, Mike, if I had to guess.
I'm sure those were probably not things on my mind at the time.
Probably not.
But the thing that is similar is the compelling relationship of the two, of Swayze and Keanu.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the thing that ended up permeating pop culture about that movie, so
mm-hmm.
that is consistent for me.
All right, cool. We found our common ground.
When you're like, you know, the actress that plays the love interest, I'm like, I know people's names, and I'm like, could not fucking tell you. Patrick Swayze.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the love interest. It's Patrick
yes,
Swayze. Of
exactly.
course.
Yeah.
So, I have a segue.
Well, let's hear it.
So, this week, we got just a little taste.
Putting my glasses down the bridge of my nose and folding my hands over and waiting for this transition.
Well, the transition was... This week we got a little bit of Destiny. We got a memorial for Lixnian humans in the tower. And we got a new ship.
We weren't expecting there to be any more Season of the Splicer updates until, period, because the new season is coming out on Tuesday. Which, for you listening, is today's the 22nd. That's the 24th. It'll be the 26th for you. So, this was kind of a surprise. It was definitely a surprise. And if you haven't seen it, or you don't even know it's there, this is like your last chance to see it, probably. I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
Even though this content is staying around through Season 15, like, I don't know. Like, who knows? There's your warning.
Great.
And now we're going to talk about what happens when you do that.
Yep. So,
go ahead, Kit. Let's hear this bit. Rub my hands together.
So, once you complete the quest, you receive a ship that has some lore on it. It's a cool new exotic ship for the season. It looks sweet. And on there, there's
like
some lore. Yeah.
Cooler than many ships that have been up for sale?
Cooler than many ships that have been up for sale. Also cooler than some ships that require you to do, like, hard stuff in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. So on that ship, there is some lore, which I missed initially, where we learn that the Zavala, much like one Gendo Akari, is an enormous wife guy.
I see what you've done here.
Ha-ha!
Very good.
Thank you.
Emphasis on the enormous part.
Yeah, we get a little... Yeah. Why, because he's a titan? Because he's big?
Oh, no.
Or because he's such a wife guy?
The enormous... No, the... neither of those.
Okay. Go ahead,
the enormous
Mike,
wife.
Explain your joke. Man, Zavala's head would have made a great head in End of Ava.
Oh, damn.
I think that's the shit post for the
week.
I
think that's the new shit post. Oh my god.
Woo. I'm pulling up the ship now.
The forbidden memory.
Right. The forbidden memory of
a forgotten outpost.
Did you have any thoughts about this lore page at all, or shall I launch into mine?
Overall, I liked it. The thing, a thing that stood out to me was, like, when is this flashback taking place? And I was trying to piece it together. I didn't go super deep on it, but just thinking about, like, there's a line about Zavala smelling the low tide.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think back to the Zavala cinematic that was around the time of Destiny 2 coming out. Have you ever seen that?
I don't know.
It's like a... It shows him being resurrected, and then it shows, like, his journey to the Foundling city.
I don't think I have seen that. I'll have to check
okay.
it out.
Okay, it's really cool. I definitely recommend it. Mm-hmm. I won't say too much about it so that you can enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a connection there with that line of low tide, and so it made me think, oh, this must be between the time that he was resurrected and him coming to the city. And then the fact that he points out that she was immortal kind of made me think that was more evidence to that.
Like maybe this was the person he was with before becoming a guardian?
Right.
Mm.
Right.
Interesting.
He was risen, but not a guardian of the city.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And perhaps this is retroactively providing explanation why he came to the city.
Mm-hmm.
Like of her death.
Right. Yeah, I could see that.
The only other thing is I was like the revelation that this is where everybody started talking about Zavala's wife, I guess. Like, I feel like people have been saying the phrase Zavala's wife for like months now.
Oh yeah, they must have read this lore.
So they must have read this.
Yeah.
And it's like, it makes me mad retroactively. Well,
right.
and in the present, but like,
uh-huh.
I was hearing people say that shit like months ago.
Yeah.
Like just saying it as if it's just facts that everybody knows.
Right.
Like, oh yeah, Zavala's wife.
It's like,
you motherfuckers! I'm mad at you! Fucking keep that shit in your pants! Jesus Christ!
Yeah, seriously. It's fine if you read it, but, you know, don't you know, subject everybody.
Yeah, come on.
That's funny. I didn't know it was like that. But yeah, you're right, I remember that moment. Also, like, Zavala's wife, like, everyone's saying Zavala's wife, I'm assuming that means that no one knows her name or anything really about her other than her existence as, like, this tragic figure in Zavala's backstory. So, like, on the one hand, it's nice to see him having sort of a moment of reflection and quietness, you know, him as a person outside of his role as a member of the Vanguard and this figure. On the other hand, oh, good, we gave him a dead wife backstory. Like, how, in order for me to feel the pathos of this moment, I would need a little bit more about who that woman is, as opposed to just a tragic woman who makes the man seem more like he's doing everything for a reason. We can just call her Yui.
Shifting Zavala's name over to the very short list of confirmed straight guys in Destiny.
That was another thing where I actually was like, it struck me as odd, to be honest. Like, a confirmed straight character? I was like, what? Huh?
Well, I guess he could be bi.
He could be bi, I know, right.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, but anyway. Even thinking of Zavala in, like, a romantic way at all is kind of new to me.
I also just had to kind of have a moment of being like, God damn it. this is the straight representation.
Yeah, it's there for you.
Fuck, God damn it. Anyway, please continue.
Well, that's really all I thought about it was that in order for me to really buy this more and feel this more, I would need a little bit more about who that person that he lost was.
That's a very good point.
Yeah. So that's one of the sort of two arms of this little mini update. The other is the memorial in the tower to Elixni and humans who were lost in the battle of the override in the last city that we just did. I thought that physically this was very beautiful. I was really struck by the kind of like wreath of white flowers and the two banners, the Vanguard banner and the House Light banner kind of flying together. It felt not like thrown together, but not in a bad way, in a way of like, you know, made by hands, made by people. It did one of my favorite things in Destiny, which is, or games in general, which is like having your characters, by virtue of the game mechanics, acting as if they're part of the story. By which I mean, I was in the tower, I went up, you interact with this memorial, and you get a little voice line that plays, but what's happening with your character's physical body is you're standing in front of the memorial. So as I was doing it, more and more guardians were coming up to listen to this and, you know, and to look at it. So it looked like I was standing among a bunch of guardians paying respects at this memorial.
Yeah, I had my character kneel when I was up in front of it.
There you go. I think I just jumped around like
a fool.
I
felt that way, too.
Yeah. Oh.
There was somebody dancing next to me. I was like, get the fuck out of here.
You're like, we're role-playing. Stop. We're LARPing.
Try to take a screenshot, you fuck.
What do you think about it? What was your take on this?
I agree. I agree with everything that you said. The only thing that I would add that I felt differently about, maybe, is it felt weird knowing that basically Eva just left and we had the Solstice statue as like this giant hunk of marble that's carved like to look like the Guardians classes. And then like if you look beyond it to the like walkway that connects Chax and Zavala, there's like the Guardian Games statue. And then like in between that, over by all the vaults, there's like the whatever that's called. Is it the Memorial to Lost Lights or the Monument to Lost Lights or
something? Yeah,
whatever that thing is, and that's like this ornate gold statue engraved with the figures of heroic-looking guardians. And then here is just like a wreath with like a wooden frame. With the flags hanging on it, and I was like, this is the best you could do for the memorial? Like,
right. Well, okay, but I like the effect that it's providing. I mean, the monuments and things that you're pointing out are more like monuments. This is more like a memorial, by which I mean it's like, it's not... Monuments have, like, a role in aggrandizing the lost, and sort of seeming to like imbue their deaths with a sense of meaning and heroism. And in this case, in the tower, like those things are all permanent, you know, permanent structures in the tower. They don't change or alter at all. Whereas this is in the same place as, like you said, the Eva stuff, anything seasonal that comes and goes. So yeah, I hear what you're saying about it's not especially impressive, but it feels handmade in a way that nothing else really around it in the tower, in this part of the tower, does. And but it feels like, you know, taking more from like a community memorial where everyone comes up and places their tokens versus like something that stands as, you know, a more general like, reminder.
I think that's what bothered me about it ultimately, is that it's not permanent.
Yeah, right.
I mean, at least as far as we know, you know, like you said, it's at the spot where all the non-permanent stuff lives for its time and leaves.
Right, well, it clearly can't stay there because we're going to need that space for somebody.
Right.
At some point.
But that's what bothered me about it, I think, is being like, the way it looks doesn't bother me. Its impermanence, I think, is what really bothers me.
Gotcha. That makes total sense, yeah.
Like they deserve, like that's what I'm trying to say about, like, they deserve something as much as any of these other, as much as the fucking Guardian Games fucking statue does.
Yeah. Right. Something permanent. That makes sense.
Right.
That makes total sense.
I'm not saying that, I'm not cursing at you, I'm cursing at, you know, whoever made that decision.
I gotcha. Yes, I agree that there should be something more permanent for sure. Something that occurred to me looking at this monument and hearing the voice line, Mithrax makes reference to the House of Silence, which I guess is the Elixni like belief about the afterlife.
That to me has got to be one of the all-time lines.
It's a great proper noun.
That really struck me when I heard that.
Absolutely. So, with the Elixni being present in the tower, we have this new awareness of injury that can't be healed through light magic, and also of dealing with death in a way that we don't usually talk about in Destiny. We see a lot of like coups that defy death, things that defy death, but we don't see a lot of ritual practices around death because of the nature of light bearing.
Yeah, it's like the only major thing is the Festival of the Lost.
That just feels like a Halloween event that they kind of sprinkled a little bit of like All Souls Day into. Like, this feels different to me, I think, because it becomes clear that there is like a practice around death and loss in Elixni culture, and that they are bringing something really important to the tower in sharing that and allowing the Guardians to participate in that. And that was really special to me. So I liked that a lot. You know, Guardians don't usually have much reason to think about the afterlife and death, except for in certain cases. Their relationship with it is totally different because they're already existing in a kind of afterlife after their life before they were risen. So that's the kind of stuff that those stories usually focus on. So it was really cool to see a little bit of a different thing. And those were kind of my only real major thoughts about this little tiny update.
It was kind of funny when I was going back and pulling some of the references for last episode, and I was looking at Asher voice lines for him saying assistant, and while I was doing that, I found a clip that somebody had taken of Asher on Io having a line being like, you know, it strikes me that Guardians are not equipped to deal with grief. And I was like, wow, I've never heard that line before, and it just was, like, such funny timing that, like, right after we had talked about it, that's when I would see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, like, I know there are a lot of stories that deal with traumatic situations, but it's not often in my memory that it's said so plainly. And I
right.
was like, somebody was thinking about this potentially as long ago as Destiny 2 launch for that line to be coming out of Asher's mouth. So
yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Asher is one of the exceptions to the rule of Guardians not thinking about death. There's a lot of connection there for sure. That's awesome. Good find.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else about, I think it's called the Heroes Memorial is the name of the quest.
Nah. Nothing else really on that. That's it for me.
Cool. Me too.
We did it.
That's the season of the Splicer.
We thought it was over last week, but now it's really over.
We made it. We did it.
I hope it's been fun joining us as we experience the seasonal story together. I hope that all of y'all listening have had fun coming with us on this week-by-week journey.
If you still have thoughts that went unspoken or things that struck you that we didn't catch or talk about, feel free to write those into us. You don't have, that's not like off the table now that season's over.
Oh yeah, definitely not. I would love to hear. It's not like the door is closed on that and you missed your opportunity. Everyone is welcome to tell us to share their thoughts at any point. I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now we're going to hear a word from our sponsor.
Yep.
And by that I mean the tentative plan is that the Witch Queen announcement is happening on Tuesday, which is the same day the new season comes out. And our plan is to record our reactions, not live, but after the announcements get made and talk about them, and that would be like the second half of this episode.
Yep.
So we're going to take a break. Which will be a couple minutes for you, but a couple days for us.
We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
And Diane's husband passed away. The insurance company said his policy didn't cover them.
They had no money to pay for the funeral.
It's so hard nowadays with all the gangs and rap music.
What about robots?
Oh, they're everywhere.
I don't even know why the scientists make them.
Darren and I have a policy with Old Glory Insurance that covers us in case we're attacked by robots.
An insurance policy with a robot plan?
Mm-hmm.
Well, certainly I'm too old.
Old Glory covers anyone over the age of 50 against robot attack, regardless of current health.
I'm Sam Waterston of the popular TV series Law & Order. As a senior citizen, you're probably aware of the threat robots pose. Robots are everywhere, and they eat old people's medicine for fuel. Well, now there's a company that offers coverage against the unfortunate event of a robot attack, Old Glory Insurance. Old Glory will cover you with no health checkup or age consideration. You need to feel safe. And that's harder and harder to do nowadays because robots may strike at any time. And when they grab you with those metal claws, you can't break free because they're made of metal and robots are strong. Now, for only $4 a month, you can achieve peace of mind in a world full of crime and robots with Old Glory Insurance.
Robots! They're coming! Robots!
Oh, it's a friendly robot. This time.
So don't cower under your Afghan any longer. Make a choice. Old Glory Insurance. For when the metal ones decide to come for you. And they will.
Hello. Hi. We're back.
It's We're back us.
After those messages.
We're here again.
Yes. It is now Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. August the 24th.
By the magic of editing, time has passed.
Wow. Editing is time travel confirmed. Hello, Mike. Hi.
Hi, Kit. Hello.
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 We are back to talk about the big new Destiny showcase.
Yeah, don't get used to this.
Yeah, we can't always time travel.
No. No. So we, since you last heard us from the previous segment.
Sometimes when you make a podcast about a live service game, you notice that something is changing in the period of time between your recording something and releasing it. It's not usually on a day-to-day basis, but.
In my experience, recording yourself is an exercise in hitting stop on the recording and being like, oh, fuck, I forgot to say that thing I wanted to say.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
So that's especially true when you're talking about a game that could be updated at any moment.
Right? I just wanted to add a little more onto what we were talking about with the memorial to lost Elixni and humans in the tower, which was kind of underwhelming at first. Was just, you know, a very simple wooden construction with some flowers draped around it, but which has seemingly day by day over the last week or so continued to get larger, with more candles and trinkets and things like that being added on. And this is, I think, my current favorite piece of environmental storytelling in the tower. It might be the only piece of environmental storytelling in the tower that's getting updated like that. But I had been talking a little bit about, like, the difference between a memorial and a monument, and how one feels more like it's, you know, more personal and for the people who have lost someone, and one feels more like it's a lionizing of people who have died. And the way this memorial area has grown has only strengthened my point. So I was double right, in my opinion. I think it's really lovely that the memorial has been expanding in this way that feels very personal and intimate, lighting candles, long, you know, a long tradition of honoring the dead. And I really like that it's growing, and I totally would not have expected it, because that is not the usual way that things go in the tower. We don't usually see that day-by-day change. So I think that's really cool and totally goes thematically with what they're doing. I love to think about each night, you know, people coming out and adding things to it. So.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's awesome.
That's cool.
They really took me by surprise.
When it got updated, I was like, yeah, that's more like it. I still want a permanent structure though, ultimately. Mm. And I haven't logged in today. New season dropped today also.
Yeah. Here we are. After there was a whole big like blowout showcase, we're here like, and about this one little tiny thing in the tower, this like little thing that's gotten added. when meanwhile it's like the Witch Queen expansion.
Yeah, I guess we're burying the lead.
Yeah. Extremely.
Yeah. I am super excited.
Oh yeah. It's really cool.
You might not hear it in my voice because it's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday night, so and we both worked Tuesday, a full day. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird energy for me. I'll acknowledge it, but I am super excited.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love Savathun.
Savathun.
I love Savathun.
Yeah.
I love her beautiful. I love that design. Like, I just spent all day when it came out. I was like, I just want to go draw this character immediately.
Oh,
I didn't because
nice.
I was busy, but I really like it. I love the way that her sort of crown and pauldrons echo the hive architecture on the moon. My favorite thing about the hive aesthetic in Destiny is the way it's kind of...
Oh, like the Red Keep stuff, you mean?
Yeah, like the Red Keep stuff. Mm. So that it's kind of, like, open. It's these kind of, like, skeletal structures, I think, in both that architecture on the Red Keep on the moon and in Savathun's crown and kind of pauldrons there that have open space kind of between very thin prongs of material, like bone or chitin, that is just so... such a good visual language to describe this alien bug crab race of people or species of people. And I really felt like Savathun herself reminded me of like one of the spires of the Red Keep, you know, like this, that, like she is almost architectural to me in the way that, you know, her look is. And I love her, like, her big floating insect wings. I love the world we got a glimpse of there.
The pattern that you were talking about reminded, quickly, just mm-hmm. the thing it reminds me of is, like, a cast iron gate.
Yeah.
What did you think of how her throne world looks and stuff?
I was pretty excited about it. So, it's very... I saw a lot of visual parallels, or I felt like there was a lot of visual parallels to the Dreaming City. Kind of interestingly, I think that the season, which we won't talk about today because we need to get our hands on it. We don't have time, and Destiny won't let me play it. There's sort of an implication that the season of the Lost is a tale of two queens, i.e. Mara and Savathun. And so I to me, it felt like Hive Dreaming City, with the similar kind of level of ornateness and ornamentation. The big, like, flowing fountains were really part of what made that comparison for me, I think. But yeah, that was the biggest thing that it reminded me of, and I kind of like thinking of these two parallel courts. You know, we always think about the Hive, or as they describe themselves as having courts, like, you know, the Osmium Court and all of that. So this kind of idea of, you know, king and queen and subjects and being something that the Hive have, that's also something that the Awoken have is an interesting parallel to me. So I'm interested to see what they do with that. Yeah, what did you think about it?
Yeah, that makes sense, definitely. For me, the Dreaming City was them going, like, let's make more Lord of the Rings, like, high elves, but in space.
Mm-hmm.
And the vibes I got from this were Alice in Wonderland, because everything's like looks like alabaster, with surrounded by like rose gardens,
mm-hmm.
And of course like Savathun being like the Queen of Hearts, like sending her knights out after us.
That's a good pull. That makes sense.
I thought I was so clever picking up on that stuff, and then I went and rewatched the thing, and they just literally say the word Wonderland, and I was like, oh, okay.
Still. Yeah.
But I really like it. It's not an aesthetic that I expected to see at all.
Mm-mm.
I was really surprised by the direction this went in. I have so much baggage of expectations coming in from all the Hive stuff we've seen over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I did not expect it to look like that, so I was very pleasantly surprised.
It was much more beautiful than I was expecting it to be.
Yes.
It kind of has that, you know, beautiful but deadly vibe going on, or theming going on, where something might look very appealing, but actually be very dangerous, which totally fits with Savathun as a character. Savathun character. To retrain my brain to say it the way they say it.
We're making a point of that because it seemed like everybody said it that way during the trailer, so we're adjusting.
Mm-hmm. It might take a bit.
Yes. It also gave me, like, I didn't write this down, but just sitting here thinking about it, like, there's just like a couple specific shots where it looked like we're fighting in courtyards,
mm-hmm.
and it gave me Big Labyrinth vibes.
Oh,
the Jim Henson movie.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I was like, that's sick. Like the parts of that movie where they're
fighting in
the
labyrinth,
like,
yeah.
Trying to get up to the castle, mm-hmm. and you see the big wide shots of where they are.
Oh, that's cool.
Like in the hedge maze and stuff.
That's fucking cool.
Yeah.
that's that could totally be an influence here. I could definitely see that. One of the other things that stuck out to me, which is obviously a big oh shit moment, you know, we talk about oh shit moments, was the reveal of those what seemed to be Hive ghosts.
Yeah, that's how they're describing them.
Yeah. I feel like there's more to that story.
I agree.
Than what we are seeing in this trailer. Notably, Savathun addresses Little Light, which is normally how we hear characters talking to a ghost. In this trailer. And, you know, saying, like, where's your truth now, Little Light? Like, that really hit me. I was wondering whether those Hive ghosts were once the ghosts of Guardians, or whether they were created kind of wholesale. I really wasn't sure what to make of that. I think we'll find out more as we kind of move along here.
People that they had in the trailer kept referring to the enemies that use the Hive ghosts as Hive Guardians, which I think is just for marketing purposes.
Right, like there's no Hive Vanguard.
Right.
That wouldn't make any sense at all.
I mean, I guess that could be like Savathun is naming them Guardians to fuck with us, to like get in our head and use our language against us also. That would be very on brand.
You know, there were of several different references to NACL in this trailer, which I was laughing because obviously that's salt. I was like, Sabathun's just trying to get us salty. She's just trying to tilt us.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That would be very in character. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm like, you know, I'm pushing my glasses up the bridge of my nose going, they should be Hive light bearers. Guardian is a title.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Thinking about it now, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
But the vibe I got from all that was, I had the same moment where I was like, holy shit, I this is not a direction I ever expected.
No, oh no, absolutely not.
When I think about other races becoming light bearers, I'm thinking about, like, the ghosts that we know, like, some change happens within the Traveler, and ghosts can now res other races for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely expected that we would see Elixni light bearers before we ever saw Hive light bearer.
Yeah, right?
And the thing, yeah, so that was like, holy shit. And then as it went along, and they say, and they specified, this is happening in Savathun's throne world, I was like, oh, okay.
Right.
So she's using whatever magic in her throne world to make this happen. It's not like this would happen outside of her throne world.
Right. Right, she's able to do this within her throne world. But she may not have the same capability outside of that.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. I must say, I had a very strong reaction to seeing a hand crush a ghost in first person.
Hmm. Yeah, from the gameplay.
From the gameplay segment, yeah.
The guardian kills a hive, one of these hive guardians, and the hive ghost appears to res it, and the player guardian reaches out and grabs it and crushes it.
Yeah, just crunches it like a bag of chips.
Yep.
I have to say, we talked recently about Shiura and final deaths and ghost, you know, killing and harming, and how that is kind of, I've been thinking a lot about morality in Destiny with, you know, the whole stasis thing and how harming ghosts and harming guardians is morally very bad. That's kind of taken over from the light versus darkness, light good, darkness bad, since the introduction of stasis. So I have to say, seeing like a first person guardian doing an act of violence to something that maybe is not the same as our ghost, but is still reminded, you know, so clearly is meant to evoke that, did give me kind of like a shiver, I have to say. I was like, oh, it's come to this?
Yeah, it excited me for future possibilities, to not make myself sound like a sicko. because the thing
Yeehaw.
That relates to what you're talking about, and the thing that I'm thinking of is, like, the precedent for that is in the lore, with, like, the Warlords and the Iron Lords and stuff, where it's, like, targeting ghosts is not a new tactic. In fact, many of the characters we know and love in the Tower have done that in the past.
Right.
But there is this list of notorious ex-guardians out there. And so, I've always been like, wouldn't it be cool if at some point in the game the enemy type that we encounter is another guardian, like in a PvE situation,
yeah.
Not just in Crucible.
Mm-hmm.
Like as a NPC enemy lightbearer.
Right.
Putting the visual language in the game now, not just in the lore, but animating the character's hand reaching out and crushing the ghost, like, that makes me think, like, oh, we're building up, like we're laying the foundation
mm-hmm.
here maybe we could finally get that.
Yeah. Right. Ooh, that's spooky. I had not thought of that. That's scary. Ooh.
But yeah, like, I'm sure that is the central mystery that we're going to be going to uncover, is, like, explaining in-universe how this happened.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be a while before we get some of these answers, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too.
Speaking of trying to explain the mystery, don't you just love Ikora with the red string corkboard, like, conspiracy theory? Did you notice who was on there?
No, I didn't, like...
I paused on it.
I had the thought I should pause
it. I did it.
I
did it.
This,
I couldn't resist.
I didn't, no.
Osiris is on there.
Ah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
There's Osiris, and, like, looking very scary, like, with his head down and shadow over his face. And then the tree from Arrivals, I think?
Oh.
Was on there?
Yeah, I always wondered what was up with the tree, because we didn't get any answers during Arrivals.
No, we really didn't. And, yeah, I'm very happy to see them showing Ikora in that more spymaster of the Vanguard role. That's really cool. I mean, I think that's...
CIA Director Ikora.
Yes, I love it. I like to see her as this, you know, kind of mistress of the hidden network. Is kind of, I like seeing that aspect of her character pushed a little bit here. If we're unraveling a mystery, she's like, you know, is she going to be our detective Ikora, Director Ikora? I don't know.
Well, speaking of the red string,
yeah.
Sabatoon, I keep all day long. I can't fail for Sabatoon. And I go to her office and she's not there.
There is no Sabathun. Man.
I did end up getting that emote, by the way.
I'm glad. Good.
But the things that it made me think about was, okay, Red War campaign ending, which is Gaul discovered that you could... even though he ended up getting disintegrated, he actually accomplished his goal, which was taking the light.
Mm-hmm.
They did it via technology, but, like, he accomplished the goal. So I'm like, okay, so there is this precedent in universe of, like, you could just sidestep the ghost.
Yeah.
Like, Gaul set that precedent.
Right.
So then the next stepping stone for me was like, oh, this is also paying off, like, whatever was going on with Nokris. like at the end of Arrivals, we learn that, like, oh, Nokris is back, and he's working for Sabathun now.
Mm-hmm. And doing his sick little experiments.
Yeah, as a necromancer, mm-hmm. bringing things back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
These are the breadcrumbs, like, leading to, like, what's up with these hive ghosts? Like, how is she doing this?
Right. Yeah.
And that's what leads me to think, like, I think this is going to end up being more of a psychological warfare kind of thing.
Mm. Yeah, that's consistent with Savathun's character for sure. Those are good connections. I didn't think of Nokris at all. I thought about Gaul a little bit as I was thinking about villains in Destiny.
Mm.
But I kind of forgot about Nokris.
I was like, oh, they make a point of, like, showing the hive bodies, like, floating in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of clicked for me. And I was like, oh, okay. Because I was always like, why Nokris? Who gives a shit?
Right.
Which, you know, probably to anyone just playing the game was, like, fine and whatever, but him being teased from all the way back in Kingsfall Raid was, like, you know, that there was a lot of time for expectations to get built up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know how to say this person's name. It didn't get said out loud on the stream, so I apologize, but Allison Slavin, I'm gonna say?
Mm-hmm.
who's listed as a production lead, said something along the lines of, I don't have a direct quote, but from my memory, it was something like, the days of the major plot developments happening only in the lore are done. We're putting them on screen. And I just thought, like, what a great payoff to our podcast specifically.
I know, it's like they heard us or something.
Yeah.
It's almost like we're recording our opinions and anyone can listen to them.
Not that that's an unpopular opinion, but
what I think it means is that what they're going for is coming through successfully to us. Like they're successful with that so far. Since they've shifted that
goal.
Yeah,
definitely. You know? It's having spent those like three episodes or whatever detailing the sordid history of the lore delivery,
yeah.
Like just to hear somebody come out on the stage and say that explicitly, like even though it was like, you know, 5 seconds or whatever, mm-hmm. It was still very reassuring to me.
Yeah. No, it's great.
Like, okay, they are staying committed to this path.
Yeah.
Like, that's very good to hear.
Yeah. That they're also happy with how it's been going and want to continue with it.
Yeah.
Another kind of meta thing I wanted to mention was that making it clear that they're going to lay groundwork for what's happening in the expansion over the next few months. Which is cool. I'm excited to see how they do that. But expressing that intention to continue the narrative in that sort of, in a structure that we know of, like, you know, act one, act two, you know, prologue, action, that kind of thing. As opposed to just, you know, each season will give you something new, a new aspect of the world to focus on, a new character that we're going to meet, a new, you know, it's... They're making it clear that that the narrative through line is present and important, as opposed to just kind of jumping from focus to focus. Because sometimes it does feel like in Destiny we have a lot of big heroes who are kind of all fighting for screen time. And a way of solving that could be to just choose a different set of characters and locations to focus on each season, which is what they do, but... I like that they're trying to emphasize that there's continuity.
Yeah, definitely. Which is something that we recognized and we identified that and talked about how the seasons are that they have changed the approach to the seasons to this way of doing things, of the major story developments are happening in the seasons also, not just the big expansions.
Right.
So that, yeah, that was good validation.
Yeah. Definitely.
The last thing I wanted to mention was something new, another new thing that I think we knew about it, but they put a name on it, which is that there's going to be another big expansion post Lightfall, and so they announced what that was going to be called during the live stream. We didn't get any more information on it than that.
Just the
title.
That
it would be, yeah, the culmination of the Light and Darkness saga, which we talked about before, and the name is The Final Shape, which has
I don't know, it just seems like such a silly
I guess it's kind of silly, like out of context, to just like put on a box, like it's like, what, this doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, that's,
but it has precedent in universe. Do you know what that is?
Yes, it's ringing a Books of Sorrow bell in my head.
Yes,
it's about Oryx, right?
Yes, it is related to Oryx.
But more than that, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, so the Darkness, capital D, TM.
You may know it from Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, no.
Destiny's basically Kingdom Hearts.
I just need Donald Duck showing up, yelling about Sabathun. I'm sorry, Sabathun.
Like Mara Sav.
With no pants on.
Oh, man.
What was I saying?
You were
the final shape.
Yeah, we're talking about
the darkness is after. That's it's something that it's a concept in universe that's describing the darkness's ideal outcome, which is the universe devoid of all life. Like which it describes as the final shape.
Ah.
And Oryx being referred to as the King of Shapes. And yeah, it's related to like sword logic, how you're cutting away, you're making marks mm-hmm. on the universe and shaping it to your will.
Yeah.
And so that at least my interpretation was that was why it's has this shape naming convention.
Yes. Okay, that makes total sense. However, you know that I have a personal theory that Destiny is the eternal war of shapes between the circle and the triangle.
Well, I mean, that's just true.
That's just true.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What is the final shape? We had the Quarbs this season, so... Thank you for explaining that connection.
Rhombus.
Trapezoid. Oh, parallelogram.
Wow.
It's a parallelogram.
Wow, every square is a parallelogram, but not every parallelogram is a square.
Called up from deep inside of you. That's some
paracausalgram.
Parallaxogram.
Wow, oh my god.
Oh my god. No, but thank you for making that connection. I had vaguely remembered something about it from the Books of Sorrow, but I couldn't remember in any more detail, so.
Yeah.
To me, I was like, that's kind of goofy, but it makes a little more sense now, what they might be going for.
Yeah, I don't know what that means in terms of what is going to happen. I assume we'll be attempting to prevent that from happening.
Yeah. One can only assume.
I'm excited for possibilities that I was not even anticipating.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah, I'm very excited about it. It's just...
As much as I love validation, this was not on my checklist.
Oh, not at all.
Yeah.
No, this was not the direction I thought they were going to go, even a little bit. Which
great. Yeah, it's awesome. That makes me very excited to be like, anything is possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can't wait to see what they continue to do.
So we said it a little earlier, but we're not talking about the season of The Lost today. We're gonna, because we haven't been able to play the game yet.
Yeah, so we'll get back to you on that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next episode.
I'm really excited to see how they're setting the stage for this season.
Definitely. Anything else you want to talk about?
I didn't know how fucking cool Gjallarhorn looked.
Gjallarhorn. Oh.
I didn't know it was so cool. It's got like a wolf-winged bear head or something on there. I can't really tell what animal that is, but it's sick as shit.
Yeah, it's a wolf because the perk on Gjallarhorn is wolf pack rounds.
I didn't know how cool it looked. I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And it shares a visual aesthetic with there's a Titan chest piece.
An exotic?
Yeah, an exotic.
Is it the Crest of Alpha Loopy?
Crest of Alpha Loopy, yes.
If you have thoughts about the Witch Queen or anything else, you can send us an email at sometimetoexplain@gmail.com. If you would like to follow me on Twitter, you can do that at, what is it, kit_boyote. I always forget it.
Yep.
Mike, would you like to share your internet information?
Yeah, you can find me at MacClubbin on Twitter. You can also find me at my website, which is michaelmccubbin.com. And you can also, if you are so inclined, you can check out the Yu Yu Hakusho Watch Along podcast I do with our friend Andrew at Watching Spirits on Twitter. And they also have a blog that goes along with that, which is very good. So please check it out.
Yeah.
Also, I want to... I know we do this a lot, but I want to shout out our friend Jez again.
Oh, yeah.
They just put up a couple pieces of art. Destiny character art of that is very relevant to my interests.
Also my interests.
Yes. But they constantly impress me. And they have a print shop, so please go buy something from them.
Yeah. They're...
Which is at Jez_Winters on Twitter.
Yeah, please go check out their art. They are kicking butt over there. That's a podcast.
That's a podcast. There it is. So, we will be back next week talking about Season of the Lost. We hope you will join us. And we will see you next time on Sometime to Explain.
Bye.
Bye.
We're heading for Venus. And still we stand tall. Cause maybe they've seen us. And they welcome us all. With so many light years to go and things to be found. Yeah, I'm sure that we'll miss her so. It's the final countdown.
Well, wait.
Okay.
Before you do that.
Okay.
Let's just say spoilers.
Okay.
Because okay.
Yes,
we weren't
I'm sorry,
expecting
I forgot
this.
About spoilers. I always forget about spoilers. Okay.
It's okay. Please, we'll do your bit right after
I
this.
I just want to do my bit about Gendo.
Don't forget it.
Okay, I won't.